Welcome back again. We thank you for being here with us on Mornings for the Master here on TGRN. And if you're listening on By Way Media, you'll recognize this program as the Uncensored Dads, the Uncensored Word podcast. We do encourage you to listen to TGRN any day of the week, obviously. Not only do you hear sound Bible lessons, but you'll also hear singing in between lessons and things such as that as well. And just a whole host of great programs. I know they're currently updating their schedule. But anytime you tune in, you'll either hear a Bible lesson or you'll hear congregational singing. And so that's always an encouraging thing to be able to listen to. And I believe on Saturday, I believe they should play a lot of lessons from various lectureships over the years. And so you'll hear a lot of good lessons there as well. That's TGRN.org. Today we're picking up looking at the Christian responsibilities. Last week we concluded the section looking at Christian responsibilities to self. This time we're going to begin by looking at Christian responsibilities in the home. And so we think about Christian responsibilities in the home, and I posted something about this a couple of weeks ago. I forget, weeks ago, maybe it was months ago. And it was something to the effect of if you will rebuild the Christian home, you will rebuild the nation. And I believe that is absolutely the truth, that we will rebuild the home. If we will start a home, rebuilding, correcting things, and we can, without a doubt, rebuild our nation, really rebuild the world. And yes, back here, back in January, more than a few weeks ago, yeah, rebuild the Christian home and you will rebuild the nation. That's where it all begins, is in the home, far as like where, how the world is going to react and how the world's going to accept or reject Christianity, and how they're going to accept or reject that which is good and that which is wrong. And so we first begin with what responsibilities do you have in the home? And I was mentioning this, Brother Matt, and I didn't have a chance to look at this beforehand, but I've used it quite a bit in the past. But way back in 1998, the CQO Pass Lectureship, actually it was the 13th annual lectureship, they had a lectureship there entitled, The Home. And you may be able to find this on Amazon, or maybe if you contact here, let's see where this one was at. This was held, this particular lectureship was held at the East Corinth Church of Christ there in Corinth, Mississippi, again, way back in 1998. It was published by Old Pass Publishing. But if you can get a hold of that lectureship book on the home from 1998, it is well worth your time. A lot of very, very good lessons, whether you're talking about just general reading or trying to learn some Bible lessons or prepare some lessons. Great, great points there, all the way from, from talking about marriage, talking about the role of husband and wife, the role of children, discipline in the home, and on and on and on. Various aspects there, and a lot of great lessons there in that lectureship book. And I'm sure I've used it several times over the years in podcasts or in sermons as well, but it's well worth your time if you can find that. Again, now, we begin by looking at what responsibilities do you have in the home? We want to begin first by looking at Ephesians chapter 6. Really, we're going to begin by looking at children, but also here, this verse really begins looking not only at children, but also parents as well. He says in Ephesians 6, verse 1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." And if you continue reading there in verse 2, he says, "Honor your father and mother, which is a first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth." Children, obey your parents. And so we first begin by looking at this idea of children obeying your parents. And you have to ask the question, do you obey your parents? Do we need to work on this? And we have to realize, of course, that there is no such thing as a perfect child. There are those children who are very well behaved, but everybody's going to have moments where they, misbehave or say something they shouldn't, or cop an attitude, as we say sometimes, whatever it may be. And that's just natural. That's something that happens. But, I think of so many families, you have such well-behaved children. And I tell my child all the time, when you go somewhere, make sure you're in your best behavior. And I always hear, "Oh, well, she's great for us all the time. She's, never a problem." And I just think, "Oh, wait, great. She's great for you guys." And then at our house is where we have to deal with any issues. Thank you. But anyway, but we have to ask that question. Do you obey your parents? When we say obey, really the idea here is we look at verse 2. If you include verse 2 in this, he says, "Honor your father and mother," which tells us that you don't just obey your parents but to honor them means you do things without murmuring and complaining. You know, you do things without, you know, you don't say, okay, and roll your eyes and huff and puff and walk out. That may be obeying, but that's not really giving honor. That's not being respectful. So do you obey your parents? And also, do you work on this, or do you need to work on this? Is there room for improvement? You know, I tell my daughter all the time that, you know, life is much easier if you just do what you're told. You'll have a lot less hassle in life. You'll do what is told and do what's right. You'll have a lot, you know, you won't have such a hard time in life. Not that she has such a hard time, but anyway. But if we will do what is right as, you know, as children, you'll obey your parents and do what they tell you, and without, you know, talking back, without giving attitude, without, you know, complaining, without arguing, you know. And don't think we're not going to talk about parents, because we are, because you can't talk about children without talking about parents. But we have to ask ourselves, you should ask yourself, do I need to work on this? And we don't ask parents, do your children need to work on this? We ask children, do you need to work on this? Do you obey your parents? Now, probably right off the bat, many will say, well, yeah, dude. And some will may kind of smile and say, well, sometimes, well, you know, maybe, or I try. And that to me is not a bad thing. At least you're being honest. No, I don't always obey my parents, or no, I'll kind of have a bad attitude sometimes. You know, when growing up, I didn't always obey my parents, or when I did, I didn't always have a good attitude about it. You know, I could complain, I could whine, you know, I could pout. You know, I remember going to a grocery store with my parents, and my mother would, you know, there are certain things you could do. There are limits. You know, you could ask, you know, could we have, for me, it was always a cereal aisle, right? Can we have this cereal, you know? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. But anymore, you know, but if I was to complain, put it this way, if I was to complain, if she said no, or my father said no, which she never went, I never went grocery shopping with him, that'd be the experience. But anyway, I went with her, and if she said no, you weren't supposed to talk back. And if you did, you'd get onto there very quietly. But when she got back out in the car, you'd get in trouble. And when you got home, you'd get in more trouble. It was always wait till your dad gets home. Well, she didn't always, I don't mean like she wouldn't get onto us or correct us or discipline us. She would. But if she felt we needed something more severe, she'd say, wait till your father gets home, you know. But we have to ask ourselves, do you obey your parents? If you do not do as you should, do you need to work on it? You need to work on it. And so the question is, do you obey your parents as you should? Do you honor and respect them when you're obeying them? And is there room for improvement? So I'm going to stop there for a moment. Let Brother Matt add anything you like as we continue looking at this idea of the Christian responsibilities in the home. Brother Matt?
Yeah, I like talking about this with my kids too. Is I was asking them a question: do you obey? Do you obey us? I mean, do you think you're obeying? Prime example of just obeying your parents is if we turn to Luke 2. It's a lengthy read, and I won't read it, but it's 41 through 52 when Jesus and his parents went to the feast of the Passover when he was 12 years old. And then they got done with the feast and the Passover, and they were on their journey home, and they thought he was with the whole, because what happens is when you go to the feast, you go with a big old group, and it's like a long, just basically feast, but they thought that he was trailing back, and when they get home, they can't find him. They're like, where's he at? What? Well, he was back there teaching in the temple, right? And one thing is, there he comes back and says, she says, son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. And Jesus just says, why did you seek me? Did you not know that I was about my father's business? But, you know, they didn't understand that. So then he went down with him. So he humbled himself. Right? This is the Christ. I know he was a child then, but he humbled himself enough to say, hey, these are my parents. I need to do what they say. So, and I think that is a great example of just obeying. You know, he could have went, do you know who I am? Kind of like you hear a lot of people, stars say, like, when they're in trouble, do you know who I am? You know, if I pulled that card, you know what happened? They'd be like, no, and I don't care. But it's all about humbleness. And do we need to work on that? We still need to work on that as parents, as Christians, as society in general. And, you know, you think about it, what are our responsibilities in the home as a child when you're growing up was, yeah, like back in the day, like what you're talking about, if I spoke up to my dad or to my mom, it was, you know that old saying, you can't hear the belt when he pulls it out because it's so fast. I mean, that's kind of spare the rod, spoil the child, right, mentality. And I think, and it's not about abusing, it's about the rod is for correction. And that's what we need to realize too, is that is our Christian responsibility in the home, not only as a child, as a parent we'll get to, but talking about the child is obeying. And it's a submission. It's not a, I'm going to just beat you if you do this wrong. It's, hey, there's correction involved. There's different avenues. And I mean, like Ephesians 6:1 said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is a command given. So I'll turn it back to you, Russ.
You know, and we think about the various, I always think about the various things I had to do when I was a kid and my attitude towards them. And I will be honest, I didn't always have a good attitude towards those things. And, you know, when I got home from school, this is what I remember, one of the things I remember most about chores. When I got home from school, the first thing I had to do was I had to do the dishes. And all the time, I shouldn't say all the time, but I asked, you know, several times, when are we going to get the dishwasher? And the line I always heard back was, we have a dishwasher. Works great. And I knew what they meant. That was me. And I hated that joke. And ironically, when my second job I ever had, well, not my first, job was something else, but the first job I ever had where actually my parents would drive me to and I worked, you know, several times a week was as a dishwasher in a restaurant. And I thought, this isn't fair. This isn't funny. This is a cruel joke because I was doing dishes still, but this time I was getting paid for it, but I didn't like it at all. You know, before I could do anything, before I could go out to play, before I could, you know, start doing anything else, it was you do the dishes, you know, take out the trash, whatever it is, and then you can go out to play. You know, if I sit down and had a snack, that's fine. But before I could leave the house and go do anything else, those things had to be done. You know, Saturday and during the summer, especially when the yard needed to be mowed Saturday morning, I knew what I was going to be doing. I'd be pushing something, a lawnmower. I never got to use a trimmer, so I got to. I really didn't care. First time I did, it scared me to death. But anyway, you know, you had those chores you had to do all the time. And if you backtalked, if you whined, if you complained, you know, like Matt said, you know, there was punishment. You know, I never felt like I was getting abused as a child, but I got whippings. My older two brothers got whippings. And I'll be honest, I've said this before, so, you know, some of the things I've learned was watching my brothers getting in trouble for certain things and me realizing I don't want to do that. Now, there's plenty of things I had to figure out my own as well. Having two older brothers, though, was a nice little buffer saying, okay, so that's what happens when you do that, and so you don't want to do that. But obeying your parents is realizing that, you know, growing up, we should know that this is what is expected of us, and we know there's going to be consequences if we don't do it. You know, if I came home one day and I just put my stuff down and I took off and went to go play and I didn't do the dishes, I would dread coming home because I knew it would be waiting for me. I was going to get in trouble. And I probably, you know, whatever it was, could be whipping plus grounding, whatever it may be. Because you did not do those things. You knew what you had to do. You knew what was expected of you. And so we think about obeying our parents. It is, especially as we get a little bit older, I don't mean necessarily as a teenager, but as you get, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, you start to learn what your parents expect from you. And then as you get a little bit older, they start to give you maybe some responsibilities like, okay, when you get home from school or after you, you know, whatever it is, homeschooling is over, whatever it is, these are the things that you do. You know, chores, it's just, to me, it's a daily part of life. You had to do your chores. And whatever you didn't do, or if you tried not to do something or you didn't do it well, you're always going to get in trouble for it. And so we have to think about that question. Do you obey your parents? And if not, it's definitely something you need to work on. And this next thing I wanted to notice here is it's laid out this way. Four dimensions in man's life. The first being the I-me relationship. That is the man's attitude towards self. If you look at Proverbs 23, verse 7, the Bible says here, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. The man's attitude towards himself. Well, this really goes back to children as well. I think about me personally, I think about teenagers and their attitudes towards themselves. How do we view ourselves? Do we think we know everything? You know, I remember when I was 16, 17 years old, I thought my parents are, you know, they're so out of touch, you know, blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, this isn't that big of a deal, whatever it is. And I was proven wrong a lot. Okay. A lot. But when we think about man's attitude towards self, it also reflects on how we treat others. If our attitude towards self is, look, I don't know everything, I better obey my parents, because if I don't, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to, you know, and that's going to be the only reason we obey our parents, is because we're trying to avoid getting in trouble. You know, there were times that, you know, my father growing up, this is going to get into, this won't be a long story of Russ's life, I promise. But anyway, when I was a little kid, my father was home because he had injured his back. When I was kindergarten, actually pre-kindergarten, actually, I was home and my dad was home because he had injured his back on the job and he couldn't work. And he was actually doing some rehab and different things. And part of that every day was he had to go for a walk to help stretch out his back and those types of things. And so I remember that vividly. We walked everywhere, it seemed like. But as I got a little bit older, and I remember him, you know, getting a job somewhere, because he didn't stay home forever, obviously. He went back, got to work and things. So I can remember as I got a little bit older, I started to notice, I'm going to pretend that I noticed this every single time, because I don't want you to think, oh, Russ was such a sweet child. No, I was a hooligan, just like anybody else. But I could notice sometimes if my parents were having a long week, or if they had been, you know, they're very tired or they're stressed, because you could hear it in the way they talked. And sometimes, not every time, because I'm not trying to paint the picture, Russ is the perfect child, but there were some times I knew that, you know what, if I get all these dishes done, I'm going to try to do a few other things, because I know it'll make, you know, my mom happy. My dad, just because of who he was, he may not even say a word, just because that was him. Doesn't mean he didn't care, didn't notice, just, you know, whatever. But my mother would many times take notice of that and say, thank you. And I didn't do those things to get the thank you out of it, because sometimes my other brothers would do the same thing. They say, okay, let's do this or this. You know, parents are stressed this week. We don't want to do anything to add to it. We don't want to get in trouble. You know, when parents are stressed, it's even easier to get into trouble. Or trouble gets much, much worse. I think about this idea of man's attitude towards self is, you have to, when you think about yourself, I don't think you can think about yourself without thinking about how you treat others. Because when you think about self, you have to think about others as well. How you interact with people, the things you talk about, you know, the things that you do as a child, you know, in your parents' home. How do you think about yourself? I think you probably think, you know, I'm going to do this or this so I can get, you know, I can go out and go play, or I can go to, you know, to the toy store next week or whatever it is. But it changes over time about how we view ourselves. But when we think about our attitude towards ourselves, it has to include others as well. Because the reason you think about yourself and how you view yourself is because you're trying to figure out how other people view you as well. So you think about how do you view yourself, because you want to try to understand how other people are viewing you as well. That may be clear as mud, but I think we have to think about others as we think about ourselves as well. So I'm going to stop there for just a moment and let Brother Matt add anything you like, as we continue looking at the Christian's responsibilities in the home, particularly children to their parents as well. Brother Matt?
Yeah, I'm just checking looking at this lesson. And it's like, if a man has the wrong mental image of himself, you know, there's all kinds of problems that can happen. Like you were talking about, too, of when you realize that your parents were stressed and you realize that, hey, why should I not do this thing that causes them more stress? And it could be just a little thing of picking up or doing the dishes, or that's even like, even at home now, as you are a parent or you're a husband, you know, you're a father, or we still have to realize that what we think of ourselves, if I think of myself as a failure, a weakling, or a coward, are you going to be happy with your daily life? Are you going to come home and be like, hey, I feel great, you know? I'm a weakling, I'm a coward. That's going to throw you all into a tailspin. But if we think of ourselves, on the other hand, as happy, a courageous child of God, clean in life, unselfish in spirit, isn't that what we want to be and who we need to, what we need to strive for? Because I remember as a kid, you know, you could sense your parents getting, you know, anxious, or, you know, it's boiling up or whatever. And I know my kids can sense that in me, and they know when to halt it, you know, stop what they're doing. It's just the thing that they know, they realize it's inside of them that they know, hey, we're pushing dad to a boiling point. So let's stop now. And I'm like you, we're not saying that we're the perfect men or the perfect children or whatever, but it's something that's in you that you sense when something's off. Just take, for instance, like me and my wife, you know, we are one, right? That's what God says. You are one. And you can sense when something's off, or your children, you're around them constantly. You can sense when they're off kilter or something isn't right, that something's bothering them. And like you talk about is our attitude can be thrown onto others, right? So when we think about this I-me relationship, it's really an I-me and others in a way, because our attitude can change the whole dynamic of our daily life, our walk with Christ, our Christianity, how we treat our brothers and sisters in Christ. I mean, it's a whole different dynamic of so much other things. And, you know, you talked about how you went on a walk with your dad and just different things, and you walked everywhere. But there was something in you that said, you know what, I need to help a little more. I need to assist them when they're down and out. And I think that's very important. And though your dad might not have said thank you or anything, but my dad was the same way. It was just, you know, and your mom would, and, you know, just different things like that. But we still, no matter what, if we're getting praise for things that we do, we still need to realize that we still need to be unselfish and not be willing to be ready for that praise and be like, hey, look what I did, and start notching things on a belt, right? Notching things. And so, but.
You know, that's a very good point, is reasoning behind stuff is a very good point. Like he said, not doing things to get praise or to make a notch for what you've done. Something else I want us to look at here is the next one we have here is the I-it relationship. That is things around us, our possessions. If you look at Ecclesiastes 2, verse 11, we also find the same idea in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 14. But Ecclesiastes 2, verse 11 says here, then he looked on all the works, and I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which, in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. It's interesting that this idea really is carried throughout the book. If you look back at Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 14, he says, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. And I like how what he says also here in the very next verse in Ecclesiastes 1:15, where he says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. What he's really saying is there are some things you just cannot change. We think about this idea of the I-it relationship, that is the things around us, our possessions, our relationship, basically two possessions is the idea there. And we've talked about this before, and I think one of the reasons we talk about this so often, because it's always a big issue. You know, if you go house shopping, what are you looking for? You're looking for a house that one, it's going to be nobody wants to live in a dump, right? We went house shopping, never said, that's a complete dump, I want that place. You know, the one that half the roof is missing, the front door is gone, I want that one. That's not what we look for, right? We say, why are you showing me this? We look for a place that is nice looking, a place that will meet our needs. And then we also kind of have to fight the urge saying, can we get something bigger? Even though it's something that, one, that maybe we don't really need, or two, that we can't really afford. You know, we were shown houses that I'm like, this is really nice, but you know what? This is way beyond our budget here, buddy. And then we're shown, you know, other things as well. And it's the same way with anything. You know, you go to looking at a car. You know, I really like this. This is nice. This is fit our budget. This is fit what we need. And then there's always, you know, for a little bit more, there's this over here. And actually, the last time when we looked for a car, we didn't have that problem, thankfully. But in the past, you know, some places it is like that. You get those high pressure salesmen, as I call them, and they say, you know, for a little bit more, you can step up into this, and you have so much more space. It just says this, this, and this. And I'm thinking, you know, so what? You know, I remember we had this guy who would come out to work on our garage door, and nothing against him at all. He was a really nice guy, but he, you know, the motor was going out basically in the garage door opener. And he said, you know, you can't really replace these. They're so cheap. You can't, you know, the parts, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, I agree. I didn't disagree with him. He said, you know, for however much, and I put you one in. He said, you can open it with your phone. I was like, okay. Well, we didn't do it that first time. In fact, he probably came out three different times doing other things. And he mentioned every time, and I told him, he said, you know what, I'm not to be rude, but I really don't care about opening something with my phone. Because every garage door opener, what do they come with? A garage door opener. You know, they come with a pad. And so, or come with a, you know, the, whatever it is, a little thing, the remote. And so that never really, you know, appealed to me. And so when it came time to replace it, what happened? I actually replaced it myself. Nothing blew up, thankfully, but I did replace it myself. And I say all that to say this is we have to think about our relationship to things. It happens everywhere. You know, you go out to a restaurant with friends and you see, you know, you look at the menu. I'm like, okay, this is what I want. Then you look a little bit further and you see like, you know, another $2, $3 more. Here's this. I'm like, oh, well, I can eat that. It sounds good. It looks good, but I can't eat that. I don't need that. And, you know, things can be our relationship to things can be really literally anything. It can be housing, it could be clothes, it could be cars, it could be food, it could be shoes. You know, this is I'm gonna tell this story and I'll try to stop telling stories, but I remember when I was in high school, and that wasn't that long ago, but I won't tell you when it was. I played for the basketball team, and there were certain guys that would buy very, very expensive shoes. And to me, you know, more power to them, whatever. We can afford it. I really, you know, it was neat. I got to see them, see the shoes because they bought them. Cool, whatever, you know, because I couldn't get them. But they, if someone got a shoe and another person got a shoe the next day, you know what happened? They'd argue about who got the shoe first. And I heard that conversation more than once. I heard that in high school. We're not talking about little teeny, you know, little kids in middle school. We're talking about teenagers. Guys with the word teen in their age. I'm thinking, this is what you're talking about? I remember one time I actually laughed at a guy. I said, who cares who got it when? It's just the shoe. and of course that made them upset and that got me fun up, but you know, whatever. Who cares? Who cares what you know, that sounded like a bunch of girls to me that did that. I just said that, didn't I? Uncensored. There you go. But you know, they argue like that. They argue like in a way that you wouldn't think guys would argue about things. But we think about our relationship with possessions. We shouldn't worry so much about them. And that's, you know, like we've said many times before, that's so much easier said than done. Because, you know, I see, for instance, I saw the new Ford Bronco that's out there. That thing is awesome. Will I ever own it? Not a chance. But it's awesome. It is very, very neat. But, you know, I look at it, like, that's nice. That's cool. You know, look at the little different things it has. That's pretty impressive. And okay, I'll never get it. One, because I can't afford it. And two, other things I think about, what else could I do with this amount of money? You know, that's something I do. There are certain things in life that I'm very cheap at. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it bites me. But I think, well, you know, I could spend less here and do something else over here. And when we think about our possessions, we have to be very careful that we don't allow our possessions to own us. We own our possessions, but they should not be allowed to own us. You may remember, I think they're still on television, those TV shows about hoarders, and they go in someone's home and they'd have all this stuff. And I think, man, how do you get that far? And I'm thankful that we clear out things we don't use anymore. We donate a lot of it. Whatever's not working, well, we don't try to donate it. We throw it away. But we have to think about our relationship to possessions. We want to realize who is in charge, and that if there's something we have a hard time getting rid of, we probably should stop and think, why do I have a hard time getting rid of this? Maybe I should get rid of it. If we're clinging that hard to something, maybe we should get rid of it. And one of the things I think about, something I've been working on personally, is spending less, you know, screen time on my phone. And now, of course, you know, I have to, because of my job, obviously, I answer text messages and phone calls and those types of things. But the other areas that are qualified on screen time, but I'm trying here within the last week and hoping going to continue this on to try to pull away from those things, because a possession can own a lot of our time, you know, own a lot of our mind, and we start spending more time doing other things and we could be spending it doing something else. And so I'm going to stop there. I'll end my little mini sermon, Brother Matt, add anything you like as we continue looking at the I-it relationship in regard to our possessions. Brother Matt.
Hey, you're not just cheap, you're frugal. It's called frugal. It's a being frugal. But I was just thinking about what Solomon talks in all of Ecclesiastes is the main whole concept is he realizes at the end that all of this is vanity. Look at how much stuff he got. I mean, he had 700 wives and concubines and just stuff, right? Just a whole bunch of he was basically almost like a rich hoarder, right? You could call it, because he just kept getting stuff and stuff. But at the end of his life, he said, "Man, all this is vanity." And I mean, you look in chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, and how many times does he just say vanity, vanity, vanity? And you think of our daily lives, we're so concerned with things. We are so consumed by things. Like you talked about the electronics, the everything, TV, you know, the best computer, the best shoes, the best clothes, the this and that. And one thing too is we think of, you think, how much stuff can I get? How much stuff can I, oh man, I've got to get so much stuff. And then you look at it and you go, why? Why do I need all this stuff? Or we're so concerned with Facebook and Instagram. How many likes do I have? How many this and that? Did people like this? Did they like, you know? And we just get so stuck on just things when we need to get stuck on God. We need to get stuck back on our families. You know, this is what it's talking about is Christian responsibilities in the home is the I-it relationship. You know, we need to be more interested in making a life than making a living, right? We get so enamored in how much money we make, how much like you talked about going house shopping. I'm not going to go to a, yes, you want nice things. I'm not going to go to a house. Man, I love that roof falling down. I think that sold. That's theirs. Or you're not going to go to a store and say, you know what? I like the soles on those shoes that are ripped out. I'm going to take those. You know, no. Well, we don't mean that, but we need to stop getting so enamored with the it, the next big it thing, right? I remember as a kid or growing up, and as we became parents and stuff, you ever hear about the big Christmas present that's supposed to be coming out? I remember one time, this is a story. I was dating Michelle, and her stepdad was, it was when those Furbies were coming out, right? And everybody's all crazy about the Furbies, and oh, he had to go buy like five, six, eight of them or something. And you look at them now, and they're at thrift store for like a buck, still in the package, right? I mean, it's things we get so enamored with that, oh, we got to have it because that's the next biggest toy, that's the next biggest thing. Or you talk about a vehicle or a truck, dude. Those Ford Broncos are good looking. They're nice vehicles, but it's just a truck. I mean, you know, it's gonna rust, it's gonna fail. There's gonna be things that fail on it's. Yes, you want a reliable vehicle. You want reliable things, but Solomon just puts it plainly of all these things are vanity. And I just want to tell you, you're not a cheapskate, Russ. You're just frugal, okay? It's frugality, if that's a word, you know. And I think that's what, you know, we just so worry about just making as much as we can. We just need to stop and realize what God has given us. Basically, so.
Oh, it's easy to get caught up in that, you know. And there's nothing wrong, like you say, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting nice things. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes also we there's two sides of every coin. We don't have to have the best of everything, but we also shouldn't look down on someone who buys a new vehicle. And I can think of some who if someone buys a new vehicle, they're like, well, they must be doing well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes I get caught into that, like, man, that must be nice. And I think, what do I care? You know, and why not think that way? It's dumb. And I get sucked into that. But there's nothing wrong with having a nice home, with having a nice vehicle that you don't have to worry about if it's going to start the next day, those types of things. We need to make sure that we are providing for ourselves and for our families. But that doesn't mean we have to have the very best of everything, you know, in life. And Solomon's interesting, the man who, as the Bible tells us there, I believe it's in Ecclesiastes 2, where he says that whatever his eyes beheld, he did not refrain from having it. Let's see here. I think it's, verse 10, Ecclesiastes 2, verse 10. There it is. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this is what I received from all my labor. This is what to me is almost hilarious. He talks about verse 10, how whatever he wanted, he got it. And then verse 11 says what? It's like grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. I can have whatever I want. And then what? It didn't bring me anything. I mean, bam, bam, right there. And to me, that almost summarizes the whole book until you get to the last chapter where he talks about what the conclusion of the whole matter is, meaning what does it all mean? Fear God and keep his commandments, because all this other stuff basically is overrated. You know, whether you're talking about spending all your time trying to gain more knowledge and learn worldly things, I think as we saw out there, while, you know, degrees and things like that is fine, but there's some people today who I think are lifetime students, and to the degree that they have actually made God no longer a priority. Instead, education is their priority. And so that's where we run into problems with, is we allow these things to creep up and they're no longer in their proper place. God no longer is at the top. The other things are starting to get in the way. The next thing we want to notice here is it's called the I-we relationship. That is relationships with parents, siblings, and the world. And this really, like we have here, like Brother Matt has laid out for us, a three-point thing for us to think about. First is our relationship with parents. Now, I think there's several ways to think about this. We can think about our relationship with parents, you know, for a child. How is our relationship with our parents? Do we get along? You know, sometimes we, as a child, will misconstrue what it means to get along. Some think we get along because I get whatever I want. That's not really getting along. To me, getting along is being told what to do and having a good attitude about it, getting rewarded at different times, you know, at the right time, not because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, but, you know, being able to go out and play with your friends because you have done what your parents asked you to do, those types of things. And so your relationship with them is good in that sense, and that's you do what you're asked to do. You do it without murmuring and complaining, as the Bible says. We do it, and we maintain that honor and respect to our parents while we're doing those things. Understand we're gonna mess up from time to time, but we try to have that good relationship with our parents, and that we can say, our parent can say, yeah, you know, so-and-so, you know, our child, yeah, they do what they're supposed to do most of the time. Yeah, they kind of get upset or they kind of complain from time to time like anybody does. But for the most part, you know, they do what they're supposed to. And you think about that today, I think about us as grown-ups. It's weird to say grown up and think about myself. But do I complain when certain things are asked of me to do? People ask me to do certain things. I may not complain out loud, but mentally I may think, why can't you do this yourself? Yeah, that happens all the time. It doesn't matter if you're in the work of the church or if you're in secular work, people are going to ask you to do things, whether it be your boss or maybe a coworker, and you may not always like it because of a host of different reasons. But we need to think about our relationship with our parents and then also our siblings as well. You know, how do we get along with our brothers or sisters? You're talking about literally our brothers or sisters. You know, I have two older brothers, and we talk from time to time because we don't live near one another. One's in Arkansas and one's in Georgia. But we talk from time to time. A lot of us is through text anymore. You know, we see each other different get-togethers and those types of things. I'd probably say we're probably not as close as we used to be because we don't live, you know, next to one another. We have, you know, people's interests have changed over the years. For instance, I'm no longer a Baptist, whereas they are. And so that is one big difference, you know. But overall, you know, we can have a civil conversation about things. We can discuss things, maybe not always religious things, but we can discuss things and have a good time together. And, you know, I think about how some family members, they can't do that. And sometimes religion has a part of it. Sometimes that has nothing to do with it. Sometimes just people, they can't get along. Someone's got a big mouth. Someone has a big personality. Someone's always rude. Someone's always got to be, you know, on, you know, the center of attention, whatever it may be. And I'm thankful that I have the relationship that I do with my parents and with my siblings because, you know, to be honest, in a lot of ways, you know, I don't want to say that it's perfect, but in a lot of ways, it could be a whole lot worse. You know, I know a lot of people who don't talk to their parents. They don't talk to their brothers or sisters. And it's not on, it's not by accident. It's deliberate. So I'm gonna stop there. Let Brother Matt add anything he'd like as we look at this idea of the I-we relationship in regards to parents and to siblings. Brother Matt.
Yeah, you think about like with children. I mean, we're dependent on our parents, and our kiddos are dependent on us. You think of parents as we are adults. I mean, we have to heave and cleave certain relationships when we are married to our spouse, and you know, there's some people that they can't stop that relationship with their parents. It's their number one goal, and we need to put that into consideration when you get married. You have to heave and cleave that relationship. With your siblings, you got to be aware of you begin to be aware of your family. I'm more on the part of there are certain family members I do talk to still, like my mom and a couple of my sisters, but my brothers and some of my sisters, they are totally into the world. They are totally just enamored into the world, and there's no discussion there. There's no, hey, you want to come over for lunch? There's just none of that. And that's a sad thing, because I wish my kids could have an aunt and uncle relationship with them, and cousins and all that. But it's kind of like if we were to get together, there'd be drinking involved with them. There'd be different drugs and just things that we are not going to be around, nor you should be around as a Christian or as anything. But what we need to realize, though, too, is, yeah, it's hard to for the sibling relationship and the parent relationship as you grow older, because like you said, is, you know, you have your parents and brothers as Baptists, and it shouldn't be hard to talk religion, but it seems to be when you get bring up the subject, it's always pushed off. It's always, hey, you know, no, we don't want to talk about that stuff. But we also need to realize that, you know, kind of like what Paul says, I am become all things to all men, that I may by all means have some. That we need to realize that though we're living in the world that we are living in, you know, we don't need to be in the world or not of the world. So though you may want those relationships with your parents and siblings to be even closer, sometimes brothers and sisters in Christ are a lot closer than your parents or your brothers and sisters, blood brothers and sisters. So, but the I-we relationship is kind of a touchy-feely for me, because I have, I'll tell you my background. I have 10 brothers and sisters, all adopted except for me, and I am the only Christian in the family. I grew up Lutheran. There's still some that believe in the Lutheran, I guess, denomination. There's Baptist, but it gets very, it's not hard for me to talk about religion, but you can tell they get squeamish. So, but I mean, I think we still need to keep that communication open, because you never know, one day, you know, you keep planting that seed. And I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but the thing of it as parents, you know, as we grow up, we need to heave and cleave as adults, kind of that relationship, but still have that relationship with our parents and siblings. We just need to, I don't know how to say, is kind of keep them at a distance if they are not going to not obey the gospel or whatever, but like kind of, it's hard to be around them when they aren't doing the same things that you're doing, basically. So if that makes any sense. So.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. It is hard. And I'll think about it. I've said this before from the pulpit here, that the quote unquote holiday period is, can be very difficult, because you're around family that may or may not have the same views as you. And so, I mean, I think about, you know, for instance, think about Matthew chapter 10. In verse 37, where Christ says, he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, which what he's talking about there in context is, some people say, well, you can't love your mother or father more than, you know, a lot or whatever. I've heard people argue that or mention that before, and I think that's silly, but because that's not what he's talking about. He says, whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And when people talk about family is the most important thing, it shouldn't be. God should be the most important thing, because when God is the most important thing, your family life is going to be so much better than it could be if he wasn't. You know, he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. Meaning the idea that our family comes above God, which means, you know, if you love father and mother more than me or your siblings more than God, that means that you're going to probably partake in a lot of things, especially during the holiday season, as they say, that you shouldn't be doing. And so, you know, he loves father and mother more than me, he says, is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. What he's saying there is that, you know, Christ is speaking. He says he has to come first. And rightfully so, right? I mean, it only makes logical sense that the Son of God, who died for our sins, is the most important person in our life. We understand God, Christ, you know, the top of the ladder, right? But for some people, you tell them that, and they think, well, you know, I really, you know, my family is the most important thing to me. That's too bad. It really is. Because God wants you to love your family. He wants you to have an amazing family life, right? I mean, we talk about there in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1. We talked about here in Ecclesiastes, thinking about this idea of, you know, what's the most important in life. It's not things, which is, it's so interesting that people fail to realize how much the Bible is in opposition to what the world says you need. You know, the world puts so much stress on you, and God says what? Put me first. Don't worry about all this other stuff. Don't worry about trying to be rich and wealthy and gain all these possessions and things. If you're wealthy, great. If you have some possessions, great. But none of those things should own you. Because when I look at verse 37 and following there in Matthew chapter 10, I look at it, who should own us? God owns us. We are his sons and daughters. You know, we are added to his family. He is our father. We are his sons and daughters. And our brothers in Christ are our brothers and sisters, right? Even when his mother came to visit with him when he was talking to his disciples, and they came and told him that your mother is waiting outside. And he said, who's my mother and who's my father? You know, who are my brothers and who's my brother? He talks about this is my family, right? Now, people will read that sometimes, especially critics, and say, well, Christ was so disrespectful. No, he wasn't. He was saying, look, this is a family of God. This is what's most important. The Bible doesn't say that Christ ignored her or never went outside and talked to her. What he did was took that second and say, look, this is the real family. This is the family here. And that's what we find here in Matthew 10, the same idea. The real family is what? It's God. It's Christ. It's your brothers and sisters in Christ. And if we were putting family above God, we're never going to get to heaven. What we're going to find instead is that we have allowed our family members here, especially those who are not Christians, who are going to start, we may not realize it, but they're going to slowly pull us away from God. Because we know that, and I put it this way, guilt trip happens. You know, traditions, people will try to, you know, will hear that, well, we've always done this, so, you know, the guilt trip can happen. I'm not saying that, you know, that's something that's, family can be tough to deal with, I'll put it that way. And really, anybody can. Friends can do the exact same thing as family members do. They can lay the guilt trip on you just as much as anyone. And really, think about it. We call it a guilt trip because the purpose of it, of people saying certain things, is to try to get you to feel bad so you'll join them in doing something else that you know you shouldn't be doing. That's not a guilt trip. That's called temptation is what it's called. And so we have to remember that God always comes first. Matthew 10:37 talks about that. Ephesians 6, verse 1, you know, does God believe family is important? Yes, he tells children to obey your parents in the Lord, right? He tells them to honor your father and mother, those types of things. The world today doesn't say that. The world today is more like the Pharisees who will tell their parent, well, whatever benefit you get from your child is a gift from God, though they won't say God. They'll say it's just a gift. And so your child doesn't have to give you honor or respect. Whereas the Bible is quite different. Honor your father and mother that your days may be along upon the land, which the Lord your God is giving you. And so the Bible stands in complete contradiction to this worldly place that we are living in. And I'm going to stop there this morning. When we come back next time, we're going to pick back up next time. I believe you're looking at our relationship with the world. And I'm just going to mark this here. And then we will move into also the I and thou relationship, looking at our relationship with God. And so we're going to stop there this morning. I do thank you for being here with us. Thank Matt for being here with me as well.
Thank you.
you'll continue to listen to us not only here on TGRN, but also on Bible Way Media and all the other programs that both Bible Way Media and TGRN have to offer. And so we thank you for listening. We hope to see you again next time.